Having no pictures with him, he suggested she write to him at the House of Commons. Next week, as his secretary left for the day, she gave him some letters to deal with and photos to sign. One request was from the lady at the faith, and the MP was impressed to see that she had come to terms with her unlovely looks. Beneath her signature, she had written, in capital letters, Horseface. Entering into the spirit of the thing, he inscribed the photo to good old Horseface, love from Geoffrey Dickens, and dispatched it. Next day, when it was safely in the post, he mentioned it to his secretary. Oh, yes, said the secretary, the ugly lady at the summer fete. In case you didn't remember, I wrote Horseface at the bottom of her letter.
Mr. Fox, I knew a lady once who really didn't know she had a horse face until one day she bent down to tie her shoelaces and somebody threw a saddle over her.
That was the woman.
Yeah, I knew a lady once. I wouldn't say she was ugly. It was just that she'd got every other tooth missing. And when she smiled, it looked like her nose was playing the piano.
Well, what about my wife? I think my wife is very beautiful. So I leave it there because she listens to this program.
Easy for you to say.
Have you noticed how Bernie Clifton always bounces on the stage? It's his wife's fault for putting blancmange in his jockey trunks.
But you wouldn't say Bernie was ugly, would you?
Oh, not at all.
You wouldn't say he was pretty, would you?
No, he's just pretty ugly.
That's it.
Right, well then, folks, at this point in the proceedings, we'll move on to the mad stories we've got, but from here on, we're only going to give them half the story, and they've got to try and work out why or how it all happened. Here's our first tall tale for our wise men. Last year, a party of American tourists being shown around the Houses of Parliament had an embarrassing experience. What was it, and how was 11-year-old Neil Cargill of Chiswick involved?
Well, it was an 11-year-old boy sitting down by the side of the road crying. An old American went past him and said, "Hey, why are you crying, little boy?" And the little boy said, "I'm crying because I can't do what the big boys can do." And the old American thought about it, and he sat down and cried along with him. I don't believe little children should be allowed into the House of Parliament because they might spoil it by saying something sensible.
Well, I remember listening to an MP when he says, "I don't want political reform. I don't want social reform. I don't want tariff reform. What I want is," and Murphy shouted, "chloroform."
I've been sorry for the new chancellor, like John Major. I mean, apparently, today, at a very lavish champagne banquet, that's a luncheon, he gave an off-the-cuff speech all about the budget. And what he did, he announced that he was cutting income tax by 10%. He announced that he was reducing interest rates to 5%. And he was increasing the mortgage threshold to £50,000. Then he sang three choruses in Elodie, and he was sick in a bucket.
There was something big happening. Do you know that Cyril Smith, in the House, he's giving up his seat. That means 27 other MPs won't have to stand up anymore.
Well, I think people are very critical of the government today and Mrs. Thatcher. Let's take a view on education. I think the standard of education in this country has improved.
Are you
so
speaking
much
from experience, Frank? Being
I am indeed, yeah.
Queen's University
in Belfast, yes. Now, if you go into your lavatory now, do you know there's actually graffiti written in Latin? That shows you that we are spending the money in the right places.
Frank Carson, when it comes to Parliament, and Frank, I must congratulate you because you do know all about British traditions. He said to me the other day, Frank Carson, he said, "What sort of a disease is Alice?" I said, "I've never heard it." He said, "Well, Christopher Robin's gone down with it." These American tourists, don't they look like a camera shop on legs. Somebody squirted super glue into the locks of the House of Commons loose and said, "How's that for a Privy Seal?"
Well, I remember when you're talking about tourists, I remember going into in Waterford, and they have a lovely museum there, and there was this big thing at the back, all bones. It was about 70 foot. I said, "Excuse me, you tell me what it is," and he said, "Yes, sir, that's a Brontosaurus."
Well,
a Brontosaurus. It's an animal. It's prehistorical. It roamed the earth before the world was made. Can you tell me what age it is? It said, "It's 2 million-year-old and 3.5 months. How can you pinpoint the age of its accuracy? He said, "Well, sir,
It was 2 million-year-old when I started here, and I've been here 3.5.
Now, look, there are some Americans...
When it comes to... When it comes to political matters, Bernie Clifton, I know you've stood for a few things, haven't you?
You've seen my act.
You'll know this.
Your wife,
Bernie.
This boy was 11-year-old, and he obviously did something cheeky to embarrass the American tourists. This can really happen. I was up in Billingham in... for pantomime.
Oh,
and
I know,
I'll show you the...
I was there one day.
You named
I'll drop Billingham, it. Yes. I was there one day. I was in Billingham one day. It was open.
I'll show you the scars. And I went around this school, and I was asking them... I'd just ask questions. Anybody wanted to know anything about show business? This little boy put his hand up. He was 11. And he said, what do they call a Spanish streaker? I said, I don't know. He said, Senior Willie.
He could have embarrassed these Americans.
I think this little boy probably embarrassed everybody by asking, was Ron Brown the Minister of Home Affairs?
Good thought.
That's a thought.
Not quite. Try again, Ken.
Try again. All right.
Well, I would think the little boy... embarrassed everybody.
11-year-old Neil Cargill of Chiswick.
Yes. His father shouted, Neil, and everybody did.
He's got it!
Oh!
I don't believe it. He did it!
It?
Oh, I did it. Ladies and gentlemen, Ken Dodd got it spot on. Well done, Ken. Can I say, Mr. Potter, it's obviously a mole on the panel. And I can see it in the back of your neck.
It's on my top lip here.
It must have come out of the rough.
Must have come out of the rough.
That is a very moving moment
well
for
done.
Us all.
Moving, yeah. Moving.
Well, very moving indeed. Anyway. And moving right along. Tall tale number two after that historic moment, Mr. Ken Dodd, accurate completely. 15-year-old Philip Grant is the subject of our tall tale number two. Yep. He was last year required to have his hair cropped short for air cadet duties. But in meeting the demands of the cadet corps, the lad fell foul of his school authorities, who suspended him for having a crew cut. Why was this especially annoying for Philip's father?
Yes, I think I can answer Frank. That one. It's obvious. I was the obvious one, and that's when I've got all my own hair. I remember having a crew cut myself on the barber's ears. You go to St. Patrick's Elementary School in Donegal Street, Belfast. I said, how do you know? He said, I've just found your cap.
I remember going in the barber's, and I said, I'd like my hair cut like Robert Redford, please. And he made a terrible job. Short back and sides, sandpaper the top. I said, Robert Redford doesn't have his hair cut like that. He said he would if he came here.
Well, Frank, you've done some funny things in your time. When you were in the RAF during the war, and you went over Berlin, you were out for a fortnight, and that's where you said we were dropping leaflets. And you said, I've been putting them through every letterbox in Berlin.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, my uncle was in the Air Force during the war, and he was posted to Egypt, and he didn't like that. He couldn't get out the envelope.
Yes, well, there was a friend of mine who was one of the best barbers we ever had in Belfast. His name was Willie Shade.
Oh, that's interesting, Frank.
Yes, well, really here, though, this fellow came in and said, there's a many in front of me. He said, three. He said, it'll come back in an hour. So then he says, there's a many in front of me. He said, there's seven. He said, it'll come back in an hour. The last day came in, he said, there's a many. He said, there's eight in front of you. He said, well, I'll come back in an hour. And the barber says to the young apprentice, go and see where he's gone to. So he came back. He said, where'd he go? He said, your house.
To say though that Bernie, your hair always looks absolutely beautiful.
It is, yeah.
It's in place.
I believe that you attended the Bobby Charlton School of Hairdressing.
Yes, that's a fly skating rink.
Hey, Bobby Charlton, now he starts his parting from underneath his left armpit. Do you know that?
Did you see me on television the other day, Ken, being shaved with a wet razor? Did you, Mr. Frost?
No.
Yes, indeed, I was indeed. And not only that, the fellow who shaved me, and I says, he cut my lip. On television, I couldn't believe it. And I said, could I have an open razor as well? He said, are you going to shave yourself? I said, no, defend myself.
I was passing a barber shop.
What about the fellow who had just one arm? And the barber said, do you come here often? He said, no, I lost this during the war.
I was passing a barber shop, and there's a group of men queuing up outside, and none of them had any trousers on. I said, what's the idea? And one of them said, well, look at the sign. During alterations, customers will be shaved in the rear.
Bernie, have you got an explanation for this problem?
Well, his father being annoyed, he probably was remembering his own times as in the services. Perhaps they had a military background, like my own family, a very military family. My dad fought with Monty, and my granddad fought with Kitchener, and my great-great-grandfather fought with Wellington. In fact, come to think of it, the old family never got on with anybody. I think there's something to do with the father's background.
Frank comes from a very military family, doesn't he? Your father deserted during the military two-step.
I'll tell you what.
I believe that Frank's grandfather took army life so seriously that one night when he was on sentry duty, he forgot the password, so he shot himself.
Well, I think this boy, the cadet corps here, and it fell foul of the school authorities, especially Philip's father. I think Philip's father was probably his school teacher, was the headmaster of the school.
I think that Philip's father was the barber.
Not quite.
No, well, I think what has happened here...
Well, you have a go at it. Were you Philip's father?
Yes,
somebody's got to take the blame.
What I think of here is, I find the question very demanding, so I'll pass.
Well, you haven't been able to do that for some weeks.
Well, here is the explanation. Philip was suspended from school for having his hair too short. This was especially annoying for his dad, who was a pupil at the same school 20 years ago and was suspended because his hair was too long.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh. I love that. Very good. Yeah. I like
it. There we are. Very lovely. And now it's time for sagacity to take over as we turn from our tall tales to our agony aunts column, where these three wise men will try and solve a grateful nation's problems. And the first listener's problem is a plea from a young lady in Roehampton, who writes, I am embarrassed about tipping. I feel it suggests that the recipient is somehow inferior, and I prefer to show my thanks with small gifts, like a flower for the waiter, or a boiled sweet for the taxi driver. But sometimes people don't seem to appreciate my motives, and my friends say I am making enemies. Am I doing the right thing?
This is the part of the program I really look forward to, because I think these ladies do a wonderful job. I thought an agony aunt was a middle-aged lady with tight corsets, but Marjorie Proops. And what if she does? There's nothing wrong in it. She probably can't help it. It's the sort of thing you go around, you feel you want to fill Claire Rayner's tights full of wasps and say, how's this for an agony aunt?
Yes, well, I was on a taxi the other day, and it was a lady taxi driver, and I was so embarrassed, he said to me, how far do you want to go?
A tight-fisted ventriloquist once, he always got out of the taxi before the dummy.
Well, I got him to a taxi and I said, King Arthur's close. He said, it's all right, I'll shake him off the traffic light.
That's very good, Frank.
I'd like it, yeah. Frank, not the middle of that guy.
I thought you did, yeah. I thought you were
the proper. You didn't forget the other program.
But you're always doing this, because you remember the other night when you left that restaurant?
I do, yeah.
Frank, and Frank's wife said to him,
I don't bring that up.
Frank said, have you left anything on the table? He said, no. She said, well, where's your teeth?
Well, that happened with Ruth and I when we went out for dinner one night. Mm-hmm. And Ruth got really tore into her the sausage, egg and onion rings. And the waitress said, are you not eating? I said, I will do as soon as she's finished with the teeth.
If you see a taxi driver, you just say to him, all I can afford, I can't tip you, all I can afford is a smile for you and a kind word. And just watch his face light up as he slowly drives over your foot.
I was in a pub the other night and I said, I'd like a pint of bitter, a meat pie and a kind word, please. She gave me the bitter and the meat pie. I said, what about the kind word? She said, don't eat the pie.
But you're brilliant. I know that you have these wonderful ideas.
I do.
Bernie Clifton's found this very ingenious way, Frank, of smuggling soup out of restaurants. When he gets home, he wrings his tie out.
Funny enough, now, that there's nothing to do with the programmers, but I think I'll tell the audience.
They
love Indian restaurants. Did you ever see the size of the crisps?
You could do what Tommy Cooper used to do. Tommy, this true, he used to get out of a taxi and he used to say to the taxi driver, oh, have a drug on me. And he'd put something in the fella's pocket. And the fella'd get home, look in his pocket, have a tea bag there.
So your advice is that she should just carry on being inventive with her tipping.
Why not? Right. Carry a tea bag.
And carry a tea bag.
Carry a tea bag.
Why not? All right, a quick word of help for a lady in Preston, please, who says,
move.
Right, Preston. This lady writes as follows. My husband retired last year from his job as an insurance collector, but he can't get out of the habits of a lifetime. He still gets up at 7 and cycles round the neighborhood, though he no longer has any calls to make. I cannot believe this is good for him. Can you suggest any hobbies or interests that would keep him happy at home?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting
up. Not at all.
Not getting up at 7. I mean, no, you're just in time for the arches.
Not only that, if I keep doing the insurance, only this, I might give out green shield stamps.
So, some people work harder when they retire than they did, and others go to the House of Lords.
Yes, sir. He definitely needs a hobby. I mean, there's many hobbies. He could take up racing pigeons. It's all right, as long as you look out for the overheads. I mean, I know an old man. He retired and got a hobby, and he was making things out of matchsticks. And it took him 9 years and 320,000 matches to make a clock. The first time it struck, it caught fire.
Well, what about my grandfather? He retired, you know, and drinking women killed him.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get them.
Women are very funny. When a man's working, they're always saying, "You're never at home." And as soon as you retire, they say, "I wish I could get you out of the house."
Yes, well, my next-door neighbour, he retired as an insurance man, and he gave it over to a young fella. He said, "But number 49 down there," he said, "you've got to watch that door. There's a vicious dog there. So when you go up, throw the dog a bit of meat, and you'll be all right." He threw a piece of meat up, and the dog bit his leg off. He said, "What'd you do?" He said, "Well, I threw it a chop." He said, "Yeah, but that was a pork chop." He said, "That's a Jewish dog."
Well, I know that you're on very good terms with dogs, Frank. And,
yes, indeed.
But did you know this? That in, because I do a lot of travelling, when I was in Bavaria, I found out that all the hunting dogs in Bavaria, do you know, they all retire, the hunting dogs retire at the age of 14. Mind you, they still do little jobs about the house. Or Schloss, as it's called.
Well, I remember Father Bradley and my parish at home, and the Mrs. McCulloch going up and saying, "Father, my dog
this
died
yesterday."
This is
not another limerick, is it, with McCulloch?
No, it's not.
Is it?
She said, "Could you say a mass for my dog? He died last week." He said, "How dare you? We don't say masses for animals in the Catholic Church." She said, "Well, in that case, I'll go and ask the vicar across the street in the Church of England, and I leave him the £50,000. I was very... And the parish priest said, "Well, just a second. You didn't tell me your dog was a Roman Catholic."
I think you should take up something physical this summer. My mother-in-law retired from the Gestapo. Actually, she took out her retirement for cruelty. And jigsaws are very good. There's a fellow got very good at jigsaws, and his wife, to slow him down, she gave him a bag of sawdust. He said, "What's this? A jigsaw puzzle of a tree."
Yes,
I think really...
Sawdust, yeah.
I think really it's...
sawdust brings to mind that pub we were in before the show started. I said to the manager, "I love these old-fashioned pubs with the sawdust on the floor." He said, "That was last night's furniture."
Couples must grow old together, must they?
Gracefully.
Well,
yeah.
That's with like your
wife and I are doing that.
Frank Carson is an incurable romantic.
Oh, yeah.
The clinic's just phoned to let him know.
DIY is very. It could take up DIY. There's an old fellow retired, and after a storm, he went out to repair his greenhouse, and he changed 48 panes of glass, and he found out his specs were cracked.
Well, thank you very much for your splendid advice. And so to our final tall tale of this festivity, an odd little item from 1968. 80-year-old Frank Turner, a baker in Wiltshire, was anxious to have a good turnout for his funeral. What steps did he take to ensure this?
Very slow ones.
On the other hand...
Maybe not. Ken.
Well, you can always tell. You always tell if you're at an Irish funeral. People always look at the deceased and say, doesn't he look well? One of the things I like to, when you go through a cemetery, you always read the inscriptions, you know. There was an old lady once in Yorkshire, she went to the stonemason, she said, I'd like you to do an inscription on my husband's name. He said, yes, I shall put his name, and dearly beloved, I said, that's nice, then I'll put R.I.P. He said, what's that? She said, rest in peace. The stonemason said, no, she said, put R.I.P.T.I.C. He said, what's that? Well, she said, I've discovered he spent all the insurance money, all that money we'd put away in the teapot. He boozed all that away, so put R.I.P.T.I.C. Rest in peace, till I come. I saw this inscription on a gravestone last week. It said, here lies the I saw this inscription on a gravestone the other week. It said, here lies the body of Hillary White. Put out her left hand and then turn to the right. Bakers. See, bakers are always very optimistic when they die because they all expect to rise again.
We had a fella, and he was the most aggressive man anybody ever seen in our neighbourhood. When he died, on his gravestone, he had put, what are you looking at?
Oh, the hypochondriac.
Yeah.
Hypochondriac had it in his gravestone. I told you I wasn't well.
I like the other one. The fella went to the doctor and said, I've got insomnia. And the doctor said, well, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it.
There was my granddad. He was an alcoholic, and when he was cremated, it took him 3 days to put the fire out.
My doctor was an eccentric. He gave up being an MD, gave up being a doctor, and took up kidnapping. And he starved to death because nobody could read the ransom notes.
My granddad was very eccentric, and he did all his own cooking, and he was taken to hospital with a scalded foot last week. He misunderstood the instructions on a tin of treacle pudding, which said, before opening tin, stand in boiling water for 20 minutes.
The BBC always amazed me. BBC, why do they never ask a florist to give the wreath lectures?
There's an old man at 94, and he was so eccentric. He lived on his own. The only company he had was a Yorkshire Terrier. They're absolutely inseparable. And he was lighting the fire one day, and it blew back, and it burned all his eyebrows off. And the doctor said, what are you going to do? And he said, I'll have a transplant. And the doctor said, well, you can't have a transplant because your eyebrows won't grow again. You're as bald as a badger. And the fellow said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll have a transplant from the dog. The doctor said, well, he said, it's very unusual, but if that's your wish. So what they did, they put him under anaesthetic, and they took a transplant from the dog's hind leg. And it was a marvellous colour match. The only trouble was, every time he passed a lamp post, he raised his eyebrows and his eyes watered.
Well, I think that's lovely. It's not the... not the funniest subject in the world, funerals, but a lot of people do. Some people would say they believe in reincarnation, you know.
Yes, I do.
But I can't see the point of coming back as a tin of evaporated milk.
There's a friend of mine and he said if he came back, he wanted to come back as a horse.
Yeah.
And his pal was walking past the corner, and the horse said, hello, Harry. He said, who was that? The horse said, it was me. Who are you? He says, Joe, your pal. Remember reincarnated and come back as a coal horse? God, he says, why didn't you tell your boss? He said you could make a fortune. He says, not really. He helped me run up and down the street shouting, coal!
What about these, the two sweethearts? Two sweethearts they loved each other terribly. She brought him a book on it, so it improved. But they loved each other very much. And they made a lover's pact. That whichever one stepped off first, they would come back and visit. Yeah. So she's lying in bed one night, and there comes a knock on the headboard, and and it reminded her of the old days. So she said, is that you, Charlie? And a voice with an echo, because it's yours.
It's me, Gladys.
She said, what's it like where you are, Charlie? You said, every morning, he said, we're up at dawn, and we make love until it's time for breakfast. As soon as we've had breakfast, we make love until it's time for lunch. After lunch, we're bang at it again, he said, until it's tea time. All the time. And then we go to sleep, and next day, we're at it again. She said, it sounds wonderful in heaven, Charlie. He said, I'm not in heaven. He said, I'm a rabbit at Prestatyn.
Well,
All I can say is congratulations on cleaning that up.
What about when they told you that a friend of yours had died intestate and you got the map out to see where intestate was?
What about me ringing up the doctor and said my wife has broken her jaw, so if you're within the area in 3 months, drop in.
If this man was a baker, he'd probably worry because he didn't know whether he'd have enough dough for his funeral. And what he probably did... They didn't give me on that. What they probably... He probably left in his will enough money for them to have a drink at every pub on the way to the cemetery.
Well, that's pretty close. I think he's almost done it again.
Well, he's right. He left them enough for them all to have a glass of varnish each.
Right.
Because that way he'd be sure of a beautiful finish.
Well, you're spoiling it. You're spoiling it. The true story was that in order to ensure a good turnout for his funeral, Mr. Turner left money to 30 relatives on condition they turned up to see him off. Each beneficiary had to produce a funeral attendance certificate from the vicar before receiving his bequest. Lovely. So, 3/4 marks to Ken Dodd there.
That's where I
congratulations,
well done,
Kenneth.
Well done.
And I'm afraid that's all we've got time for in our festivities this week. If you're wondering why your neighbour's building an ark in his garden or why your parrot keeps standing on his head, let us know and we'll try and work it out for you. Just for now, this is David Frost thanking you for joining us on behalf of Ken Dodd, Bernie Clifton and Frank Carson, Andrew Palmer and Nell Brennan, who devised and researched, and our producer, the one and only Edward Taylor. We hope you'll join us again next time. It's time to pull the other one.